Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia.
Hey everybody, that was the great Dar Williams singing the Solartopia song with the magnificent Pete Seeger and David Burns, who wrote the words to that Grammy-winning aria, except for the one Solartopia, which I wrote. I'm Harvey Sluggo Wasserman. Great to be with you here on PRN-FM. We got an hour of the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We're going to be talking about what else, the upcoming election. We think it's going to happen. We haven't heard much rumbling from the lunatic in the White House about calling it off or postponing it or anything like that. We are proceeding, but we're having great problems that are, shall we say, purposely created in terms of pulling this election off as a Democratic exercise. We're going to be joined with some of the true greats, my friends and cohorts who are deep in the weeds and in the weed about talking about this election and how it's going to be protected, how it's going to be pulled off, and what needs to happen. We're going to start with my good buddy Joel Siegel in Charlotte, North Carolina. We'll be joined by Mimi Kennedy out here in L.A. I'm in L.A., where it's and the temperature dropped. It's actually a frigid 90 degrees here today. We are just really enjoying the cool weather. Thankfully, it was literally, and I mean literally, like a sauna outside here in Los Angeles. You walked out the door. I've been in saunas many times in my life, and there was very little difference between being in a sauna and being outside in Los Angeles over the past weekend. It was 121 degrees in Woodland Hills, and the previous high was 112, which had happened a few days before. So in my little domain here in the valley, I walked outside and you just kind of got bowled over. It was unreal. Steve Rosenfeld, you're with us as well. Is that right? You're on the phone, Steve? Can't hear him. Jesse, if you can unmute Steve Rosenfeld. There we go. Steve, you're on with us?
Yep.
Hi. Yeah, what was it like? What was the temperatures like in the Bay Area over the weekend? I was telling the folks it was 121 degrees in Woodland Hills. My neck of the woods, it was 112. Not quite that hot in the Bay Area.
No, not quite that hot. But as you go in from the coast, it got up between 100 and 110, or a little more than
astounding.
That.
I don't know how many of you folks are listening in that were in temperatures that high, but truly, truly amazing stuff.
It's the air. The air quality because of the smoke.
The smoke was bad too. In fact, I was in a pool to keep cool from the heat, and I had to get out of the pool because the air was too bad, and I just had to go inside and give it up. It was amazing. All right, Steve Rosenfeld and Joel Siegel, we're waiting for some other folks, but we're gonna start right in. Steve, you were talking to me before about early voting is actually starting now in some places. And by the way, Steve Rosenfeld with us is one of the great experts and the great reporters on the ongoing election and how it's proceeding. Your stuff is at Ballot Box and at numerous websites around the web. What are we seeing now as the vote starts to happen around the country?
Well, what we're seeing is there's a lot that's resolved in the sense that election officials are locking down sites for in-person voting, and they're working to figure out how they're going to handle the flood of absentee ballots or mailed-out ballots. But we're sort of in this limbo where in the swing states, the battleground states, there are still unknowns. And some of those unknowns have to do with it's sort of the timetable around the finish line, like when and where can ballots be returned? And so for example, in Pennsylvania and in other states too, Michigan, there's litigation that's open-ended. So what that means is that we're getting to this place where they're either going to have to be court decisions or not, and then people are going to have to really figure out what the rules are locally for them. But the biggest change I could tell you about in the last 2 to 3 weeks, and you're seeing this in polls that are done by like the most reputable pollsters, which I put in quotes because it's just snapshot information, is that large numbers of Democrats who said a month ago they were going to vote by mail now say they're going to vote early and in person. And that's a big difference. Literally, the number have fallen in half. So all this talk around Trump might be leading in the early returns because there are more Republicans who are likely to vote in person than Democrats may actually not be true if these polls hold up. So I'll leave it there.
Well, that's a big deal. So what do we think about the quality of early voting? For example, if you go to early vote, well, this is the biggest one. If you go in to vote early in your various states, and obviously it's going to vote vary state by state, are you going to get a paper ballot or are you going to be voting on a touchscreen machine?
You know, Harvey, these are these issues that have been around. They really were pre-COVID, but they've been submerged since COVID, and now they will resurface. And it will vary. You know, what it is, in most places, you know, there are paper ballots. They're not all electronic systems. The question is it a machine-printed summary or is it a hand-marked, human-marked piece of paper? And then it goes into a counting process. And the thing around all that is if we have really close finishes and we have fights in these battleground states, you know, after November 3rd, that could determine the presidential election or control of Congress, the volume of ballots and the volume of and the time that it will take to count, because some of these states like Michigan and Pennsylvania, you cannot start counting until Election Day or even when the polls close. Unlike Florida and Arizona, where you can start counting 16 days early, what's going to happen is we may run out of time. Literally, the timetables were written decades ago, and so this is where it's at. There's all this uncertainty around that, and just as some people, you know, will be so, what's the right word, you know, provoked by Trump's craziness, other people say, well, if he wasn't so frantic, he wouldn't be doing all this crazy stuff. You know, nobody who's only at 40 or 42% nationally at this time, you know, has ever won. But then again, no one expected that he was going to win in 2016. At least amongst, you know, Democrats and progressives. So that's where we are. You know, a lot of uncertainty and it continues.
All right. So my listeners, if you are in deciding to early vote, it will vary from state by state. Now, Steve mentioned ballot marking stuff. If you get a paper ballot in some states, you're going to mark it by hand and then you're going to insert it into a digital scanning machine. Now that's, in my mind, that's the ideal situation. In other words, you get a ballot. Now you may have gotten the ballot in the mail. There's another thing. What are the regulations? If you get a ballot in the mail and you want to walk it in to the polling place early, are they going to accept the ballot that you got in the mail, or are they going to give you a new ballot and make you mark it up differently?
Harvey, the answer to that question varies from state to state and in some states from county to county.
Jeez.
And it's really, really important. You know, these are levels of detail no one ever had to think about before. But in some states, what you can do with dropping off a ballot before Election Day is not the same as Election Day. Although, and this is also true with in-person voting, you know, some of the longest lines I've seen, by the way, were in Columbus, Ohio, on the Saturday before Tuesday, because there was only one place in the county to go to vote early and in person. And so, again, you know, it really becomes a question of voters having to take on the work of making a plan and figuring out when's the low traffic periods and where can I go and give myself enough time to do it. And there, you know, when we have these national conversations, we're not really helping people in a certain sense because we cannot tell them with enough local specificity of what they need to do. We can just sort of say, well, the road goes this way, and then you come to this fork and that fork and that fork. and then you...
Mind-boggling. So you've been a part of our calls. We'll do it again on Monday, upcoming September 14th, grassrootsep.org. Folks, if you want to be in on a national Zoom call to discuss these issues in greater detail, grassrootsep.org. We have coordinators, state coordinators, that can help with these questions in Arizona, Florida. Joel Siegel on the line from North Carolina. Bob Trakas will be joining us from Ohio. We have Jan Bendor in Michigan. I'm trying to get people lined up now in Wisconsin and Iowa. And these are the questions that will determine the outcome of the election. Now, the ideal situation would be either you get a ballot in the mail and you walk it in, and Mimi Kennedy will be on to talk about a bit about this, with the envelope. You have to take the envelope with you, because in many cases, if you show up at the polls with your vote by mail ballot and you don't have the envelope, they're going to give you a hard time. We want them filled out as much as possible by hand, but in California, there are ballot marking devices, which is a total scam, made somebody a lot of money, and no, absolutely unnecessary. Could have been done with pencils or pens, but they insisted on that. Now, then the question, Steve Rosenfeld, and this has a big impact, and again, I know we're in a limbo here. Actually, when I was younger, I could do the limbo, but my knees are shot, so I can't, you know, I can't do it anymore. But we are all in limbo. And the bottom line is that in many cases, people with paper ballots will be inserting the paper ballots into digital scanning machines. And then the ballot goes out the other side, so a digital image is created. Now, in a situation like that, you can get an instant vote count, right?
Well, you can, you get pretty quick results. What happens is the paper ballot is not what is actually counted in terms of the voting machinery. Literally, the technology takes an image of every side of every card, because sometimes ballots are multiple cards, multiple pieces of paper with different races, and it analyzes, like a grid, where the ovals are filled in or not filled in, and to what what percentage is filled in, and if it's under like 10 or 15%, like literally different states have different sensitivity settings. Georgia is higher than Colorado for rejecting, by the way. And same technology, same machines. And so what ends up happening is you end up getting these quick precinct counts, and then they go over by whether it is a virtual private network, which is like it's an electronic signal, it's a version of a cell phone signal, or it's a phone, or it's a hardwire line, or a cell phone modem. It all goes in, gets sent to a central location where the counties tend to count these. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't hard drives or thumb drives with the data from the precincts. But what happens is, you know, the summaries get sent ahead of all the backup materials, and then that's what gets added up and gets channeled or funneled into the secretaries of state websites, which is what we end up seeing on the news when, you know, whatever percentage of it's reporting and what, here are the totals, and they pull up the maps and they make their guesswork and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, so, but that's actually how it happens. And when it comes to voting by mail, and the reason that there might be delays is that people have to check in or approve the envelope first. This is like the equivalent of somebody, you know, walking into a polling place and having you show ID. They have to process, and this is where the whole signature verification thing comes in. And some states allow the processing to be done literally starting 2.5 weeks out. So all then they have to do is open up the envelopes on election day. In some cases, it's election morning. In other cases, it's election night, and start running them through giant scanners. So, for example, that means in Florida and Arizona, we will have totals very, very quickly, because they start processing, not counting, but processing more than 2 weeks out. Michigan and Pennsylvania, they don't start processing until election day. That's what could really cause delays there. So, you know, when you say, like, how fast will we have results, you know, and those are the variables, you know, and to be honest, it's very, you know, a lot of Republicans don't want to speed up the process in swing states because it gives them an opportunity to make a lot of noise and make all these claims about the process being less than honest and all screwy. And then we can't trust this and trust that. And but actually, in those two swing states, which I think could be, and actually Georgia will be pretty quick too. You know, we're going to see results very quickly. You know, if not Tuesday, you know, certainly by, you know, by Wednesday. And, you know, you don't really hear that out there right now very, very much.
We're talking with Steve Rosenfeld, one of the nation's leading experts on the procedures in the upcoming election. Steve, what's your book and where can people get it?
Well, my most recent book, it's like ancient history now. It's it was about the 2016 election.
Yesterday's news is ancient history.
I know it's crazy, but I did put together a new website where I have my most recent stuff, and that's it's literally called votingbooth.media, and people can go there and, you know, they can find links to things, and what I'm trying to cover is I'm looking for solutions. And what can scale? What can go wrong, but what can go right? So for example, and I have to write about this. I haven't done it yet. But, you know, as much as people hate Mark Zuckerberg for all kinds of reasons of what Facebook has done with disinformation and misinformation, and there's a lot of justification for that feeling, he gave $300 million last week to two nonprofits that are going to be dispersing that to local election officials to pay for all kinds of things that they're not getting from Congress. So I'm trying to figure out, well, what are they going to spend it on? And so they could, now this is, I don't know what they will, they could be spending it on things to help people whose early ballots are rejected, getting in touch with them to get back in there and cure it or fix it before, you know, the clock runs out. They could put up billboards on where people could or could not turn in their ballots early or vote in person early. They could buy drop boxes, although I've heard in some states that they have been ordered, like Missouri, and the legislature said, no, you can't use them. And it's still in court in Pennsylvania. So this is the kind of stuff that I try to get into because I feel like, you know, we need solutions, not just bad news and, you know, the sky is falling and, you know, the apocalypse is here.
No, exactly. And, you know, there's so much discussion now about what are we going to do if Trump loses and refuses to leave? I mean, nobody's dealing with the fact, what if he wins? And, you know, and how do we protect him from winning with a minority of the vote again? Now, when Zuckerberg gave this money, did he earmark it for particular states? How's it being dispersed?
There are two nonprofits. One is, I happen to know, I was shocked to find out. I happen to know this one fellow who is running one of them. And basically, they have an application form where any election official, local official, who is designated as being a representative from their jurisdiction, which, you know, in Michigan and Wisconsin, that could be teeny weeny townships of like 150 people, or it could be, you know, the county of LA or the county of Maricopa, where, you know, Phoenix is, with millions of people. They just have to. They just go online and apply. Minimum grant is $5,000.
Joel,
it's free money.
Are you hearing this, Joel? This is Steve Rosenfeld is telling us this is amazing news. Are you gonna write about this, right?
Yeah, Steve? I'm trying to get in touch with people to tell me what they're hearing. People want to spend the money for, like, what do they need? But when I'm talking to people, for example, like they could use it to pay for postage, potentially.
All right, so Joel, you're in North Carolina and doing everything possible to get this election on an even keel. And Steve Rosenfeld has just said that Mark Zuckerberg has made available $300 million through two foundations to provide money in $5,000 grants. That have
or more.
To
That's the minimum. That's the minimum. $5,000 is the minimum.
They have to be applied for by election boards. Is that correct, Steve?
Yeah, any local election official can apply representing a jurisdiction. I'm looking up the names of these organizations as we're talking.
So, Joel, in North Carolina, this could be huge. I mean, there's 100 counties in North Carolina, and all of them are going to be stretched to the limit by the logistical realities of the upcoming election. Everybody's short of money. And now Mark Zuckerberg has made available through these two foundations $300 million that can the county election boards can apply for. This is big news.
Well, good to be on the call, especially with Steve. What he just talked about is incredibly important. A lot of people are going to go in person early voting. That's very important for our purposes. So I want to thank him for that. And I also want to just say, if we don't get our temperature down and we don't go to 100% clean renewable energy, our planet is literally burning up between the fires, the so-called, you know, once in a century earthquake or once in a century hurricane, once in a century flood. So the reason why this vote is very important, if we have 4 years of Donald Trump and Pence and McConnell, that means we're not going to, you know, any kind of we've had. No, we got to. So for people who say, well, I'm not going to vote because I'm not happy because we didn't have Bernie and Biden is not, you know, liberal and progressive enough for me. I would say if you want to live in a sauna for the rest of your life, go ahead and vote for Trump and Pence. But anyway, all that being said, we got to get out and vote. This is the most important election of our lifetime. The grants that there's lots of grants out there. Unfortunately, there hasn't really been a real systematic way to access those grants. So if we in Charlotte and North Carolina have over 40 organizations with a very sophisticated operation to get out the vote and protect the vote, we have a total of $70,000. There really is a problem where the coalitions have been formed, but we're not getting the money that we need. And so if we can get to Zuckerberg, that's great. As someone who's worked in that world of the Zuckerbergs, when I, you know, worked for John Conyers for 13 years, you know, you got to know somebody who knows somebody. But the Democratic Party is not going to, you know, we're nonpartisan, but I'm just saying the Democratic Party is not going to fund our movement. We have to get private donors to give us the money.
Now, Steve, have you found the names of those two?
Yeah. So the applications, the only people who can apply for this money are local, somebody who's representing a local election jurisdiction, whether that's a county election board or whatever you want to call it. So unfortunately that cuts out, you know, the activist community, but it's still, you know, if somebody's trying to be responsible and do the right thing and they have the discretion and they haven't been told by their state legislature, no, you can't do that, they can apply for money. It's this, though. So $250 million, it's to the Center for Tech and Civic Life.
I like to write that down too.
Yeah, so it's the Center for Tech and Civic Life.
TECH?
Yeah, TECH. And Civic.
Where are they
Life.
Based?
I think they're based out here in California.
Okay.
And then $50 million to the Center for Election Innovation and Research.
Election Innovation and Research. So they have $50 million, and the other one has $350 million.
No, the other one has $250 million.
$250 and $50 million.
Yeah.
Let me say something. Sorry, Stephen.
No, go for it.
Go ahead. First of all, invaluable. I mean, that's why we have a network. And for some reason, you know, coalitions. A lot of people don't do coalitions anymore because of the prison, not the prison industrial complex, but the other one, the nonprofit industrial complex. And I have to be honest with you, in North Carolina, I really had some problems with your nonprofits who didn't want to work with us because they were like, well, who are you guys? I'm like, I don't know, most of the country that's progressive. But the reason why it is important to have this money is so you can establish your own autonomous, independent infrastructure. Where we are very blessed here is we have activists that we're working with because Harvey gave us the vision through his trifecta plan, who are activists who are on the Board of Elections. So now that I have this information, we'll send a delegation to meet with some progressives that we worked with over the years and ask them to go ahead and get that money. So that is where the marriage of the progressive grassroots can go to the Board of Elections and say, we want to tell you about this program. The biggest problem we have in North Carolina, lack of trained poll workers to count the absentee ballots. They depended on senior citizens. They don't have them. This is going to be a disaster in so many different states, just like it was in New York State, where Cuomo's a pretty sharp fellow, and they still had a disaster. We need that money to hire poll workers. to train them.
Well, here's the question, Steve, that you probably know, and Bob Fetrakis has joined us from Columbus. What is the process for someone who wants to be a ballot counter to be approved by the election board to do that?
Well, again, you know, this really varies from county to county. Bob can talk more about it. You know, to be a poll worker, there are a lot of corporate America, this was in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend. You know, corporate America has helped recruit what they say 300,000 people who are willing to be poll workers nationwide. Now, I haven't seen the breakdowns. I'm trying to figure this out, you know, like where, you know, in what states, and then also, you know, by party. But then the question is what Joel just points to is, you know, if you've looked at a poll worker manual, they are rather dense. They're like college textbooks, not even like high school textbooks. Right. And it's a lot of material to go through. And so even though it's really great that people are stepping up and saying, hey, we want to participate and we want to, you know, have it so the, you know, people who are 65 and older, the typical poll worker, 2/3 of them are not going to be at risk under COVID. There's still a lot of training that needs to happen. You just can't walk in and say, okay, I'm ready, let's go. And so what Joel is saying is really a very interesting point. And so Harvey, to apply to be a poll worker, in most cases, you have to apply. You have to fill out a form, and in many states you have to be a registered voter in the county. Some states, it's the jurisdiction, which could break where you want to actually serve. But mostly it's the county, so you can't just say, "Hey, I'm from one part of New York State. I'm going to be a poll worker in another part of New York State." They're fighting about this, by the way, in Pennsylvania. The Republicans want to bring in people from other parts of the state into the blue cities. And the current law, I think, says, no, you have to be a resident of that county. So once again, it's just another area that is filled with details no one ever thought were there that need to be understood and mastered.
It's unbelievable. I mean, but this is amazing. Bob Fetrakis in Columbus, Ohio, you just joined the call. I'm not sure you're aware, but Steve Rosenfeld has informed us, and this is the first I've heard of it, that Mark Zuckerberg has given $300 million to two foundations to which local election boards can apply for grants. And, you know, their election boards are paying poll workers. I mean, you can make a couple $100 in many states working just a single day as a poll worker. So the two key spots that we have identified in our many phone calls on with grassrootsep.org and other information is that the two of the key, if not the two key choke points in this upcoming election are, number one, where are the ballots going to be approved as they come in or eliminated for the lack of a middle initial or something like that? And then secondly, how is the counting going to be done? Now, in each case, it's going to be poll workers under the jurisdiction of the election boards. So people are asking everywhere, you know, how do I help? How do I become a poll worker? Bob, what's the process in Ohio?
Well, the process in Ohio, they're really looking for another 15,000 poll workers. Here's the process. To be a poll worker, it comes out of the party in Ohio. That is, you run and get elected to the Central Committee. I was actually a Democratic Party Central Committee person for the 55th Ward back from 96 to 2000. Then you're given a list based on seniority. So a lot of my poll workers, I had one in her 90s and her daughter in her 70s. So traditionally, these are people whose husband or grandfather used to do something for the party back in the 1950s. So those go by seniority. But the problem in the pandemic is a lot of these older poll workers don't want to work. So you can actually go down. I heard Steve, he's right. And you go in Franklin County. They're hired by the county. You go down to the Board of Election, and you do get this intense manual, which is a public record. I get it, and they actually pay you for going to classes. But what we found with younger people, the older people didn't know how to set up a lot of the voting machines, the computer voting machines, nor did some of them know how to download the electronic voting polls. So when I was in charge, even then, we were bringing in younger people and my wife, who's a tech person, because nobody at the place, including myself, and I was the precinct captain and central committee person, knew how to turn on the machines.
Yeah, well, this is a problem. You know, this is like grandma trying to work an iPhone. So I don't know, Steve, does it make sense to take well, I guess they're different everywhere. The manuals are going to be different. Are they different in every state or in every county?
Mostly by state, yeah.
Mostly by state. Does it make sense to have people go in and take the official manual and try and do a digest so that people can understand them?
Harvey, it's really complicated. I mean, I have a hard time understanding them.
Yeah, I know I wouldn't be able to read a paragraph. You know, I mean, I would just go.
I mean, you know, so Mimi's on this call and she's concerned about, what's going to happen with like turning in a, you know, like what can voters do who apply to vote by mail? Maybe they get their ballot, but they haven't filled it out. Can they turn it in person? So we were trying to figure out the answer to this. And so I was looking up in the most recent version I could find of the South Carolina Poll Worker Manual. I mean, you have to wade through a lot of stuff to find something that's written in legalese. And even then, we're not sure that it's, you know, we can tell people what the exact answer is. And we're trying to do research on this stuff. And we have a little bit of background here. So what does that tell you?
It tells us that we're headed for chaos, which is exactly what Trump wants. Joel Siegel, you got a hand?
Yeah, I'm going to depart after this, but so everyone else can speak. I am very concerned about three things. One is the machinery for the post office where I live was stolen. They took 7 sorting machines, and we're trying to get them back. They took parts out of the machine. They did this across the country. And that's illegal. You can't impede the mail, or they use the word retard to mail. And I don't know, there needs to be a prosecution of the Postmaster General for a crime that was committed. It's unconstitutional. You can't do that. So there's going to be a lot of absentee ballots that are going to be backed up. And we're going to really have to look at this in terms of, this is a crisis, because if you don't have a lot of education about voting and you miss the postmark of your ballot, it's not going to be counted. And in North Carolina, there was over, like, it's some ridiculous amount, 3,000 to 4,000 ballots since the last two elections that were not ever counted. But what's going to happen to the absentee ballots in terms of how they're going to be counted, where they're going to be stored? I think that's a really big concern that a lot of progressives have to keep their eye, you know, on that ball.
Well, also now, you've got the names of these two foundations and you've got this network in North Carolina. So it's time now to jump ahead and get these election boards to apply for these grants. I mean, that's a big deal.
My call is actually right when I get off this call, I'm calling a former Democratic Black state legislator who now works for the Board of Elections, and I'm going to set up a Zoom call. So thank you, Steve.
Yeah, this is a big deal, and this needs to get out.
So, Joel, the application form is on the homepage of the Center for Tech and Civic Life.
Oh, wow! Okay,
it's right
that's
there,
important.
And you know, it's right there.
And Steve, I also wanted to tell you that there was a huge voter caging operation in North Carolina where there were so many ballots that were mailed out to people, and I looked at mine. And the return address was not the Board of Elections. It was the name of the group that I Googled. So a lot of us complained to the governor, and they just sent out, you know, everyone's going to receive a ballot here in North Carolina. But one thing that we're doing, we're holding 2 symposiums all across the state. And if anyone's listening, I really hope that you'll do it where you live. But we have to do intensive voter education regarding the ballot. That's the important distinction. there's so much confusion. People don't know what to do with the absentee ballot because they never voted absentee. You have to have a witness. And most of the absentee ballots that aren't counted, they didn't have a witness. And that's why, because of Harvey and this new coalition, we're going to start our public service announcements and webinars and everything so we can explain, look, you got to have a witness. And here's a number you can call if you have questions.
Well, also, yeah, I mean, Joel, Steve is writing these pieces. I don't know, Steve, if you know what they did. Joel, can you describe what happened with the reception of these apparently fake ballots? Somebody, and Bob, you're familiar with this in Ohio, a statewide caging operation. Joel, tell me if I got this right, where some independent organization, God knows, maybe the Republican National Committee, sent everybody in the state an apparent ballot with a return address that is not the Boards of Election.
Right.
What is that?
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to a lot of people who've got it, and I have it in my file cabinet, so I have to get back to it and do some more work. But this is part of that $20 million voter suppression campaign that's being orchestrated by the Republican Party and the Trump oligarchy. And this is an example of an operation that's quite, it's like ContoPro, you know, from the 60s or 70s. And it's very sophisticated. So there's going to be thousands and thousands and thousands of people who are going to, you know, fill out this application, send it to this organization. The idea is, oh, I've done my application. I got it from this organization I've never heard of. Hence the reason why the governor is sending us all an official ballot. But that's why we have to do the education so people understand that you got to have a witness. And a lot of times they throw them out because they missed a bubble or something. So to do this right, we have to educate.
Can I just ask a question here? I want to be really clear about this because, you know, there are organizations that have been associated with the Democratic Party that in the state of Virginia, they got something like $15 or $18 million to do this. They are sending out we're not talking about ballots. We're talking about applications for the ballot. And in Virginia, this was they had the wrong addresses. They confused counties and cities for jurisdictions, creating a giant mess in Fairfax County, which is the northeastern part of, you know where it is, in the northeastern part of the state, the biggest Democratic epicenter. So is that, do you think that that's what is actually happening here, that organizations, whether it's, you know, left or right, are sending out applications so they can basically data mine and grab people's contact info and stand between them and voting? And you're saying, well, now it's such a mess, the governor is going to have the state actually send out an official application. Is that what's going on here? I'm just trying to be really precise because we're not talking about, because, you know, ballots only come after you apply. In a lot of places, you have to first apply.
No, that's a great question. I asked the question yesterday to a voter expert here, and maybe the expert wasn't quite an expert, but I said, is this an application to get the ballot or is it the ballot? And they said, no, they're going to send out the ballot. So that's something we'll have to find out because that's an important distinction. It's hard.
You're saying that the governor of North Carolina has decided to send every registered voter in North Carolina an actual ballot?
That would be great news.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, and that's from a very legitimate source. But it would make sense that it would be that as opposed to an application because the mail has been slowed up so radically. And but that I'm not sure about that. But yeah, every registered voter is going to get either an application or a ballot.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be a major national story. I don't know if the governor of North Carolina would have the actual power to decide to send out an actual ballot. Steve, what do you think? Or Bob, does that make sense that the governor could do that?
I don't know. I would think he would have the authority to an application, but not necessarily a ballot. I think the legislature would have.
Yeah, I would think he would need the legislature to pass a law. Although the pandemic, in extraordinary circumstances like the pandemic, not the governor but the health director was able to dictate exactly how everyone would vote by mail. within hours of an election to be held at polls. So, and you have this problem in Ohio. The Secretary of State, LaRose, who's a little more moderate than the far right wing state house of Republicans, wanted to send everyone a ballot. And they passed the law forbidding him from doing that. In fact, he's looking for money. So because he wants to pay for postage, they also prohibited paying for postage.
Well, maybe he could get a Zuckerberg grant and use it in Ohio. But now you're saying that even if he got the money, the legislature has banned him from doing it. Is that right?
Yeah, and also he claims he wasn't sure, but he thought they banned him from having more than one Dropbox because of the cost that the security of the camera would cost too much.
It's unbelievable. God, we're talking with Steve.
Well, you know, what Joel is saying.
Go ahead.
Yeah, what Joel is saying is really, really important and worth going back to, because I was told last week that North Carolina is the state that sends out that sends out literally ballots the earliest. So these are the people who have already applied. So if there is this confusion that's being created around the application process, the thing about it is there's confusion. So amongst us, we can't even say it's this versus that. But this is a canary in the coal mine type situation, because that state is the first state in the country, I was told, calendar-wise, to literally start sending out ballots, like 60 or 62 days early. Not applications, ballots. So we got to figure out what's going on there, because, it could really be a sign of, no effective idea goes unstolen in political campaign circles.
Right. So Joel had to sign off, but This is a major story here. What is the governor of North Carolina going to do if the governor of North Carolina tries to send out ballots to every registered voter? Trump will go completely bananas.
I can't believe it's going to be ballots. I have to believe it's applications, because it's in the law. You have to apply first, and a lot of people aren't signed up. They're not lined up.
Does the governor even have the authority to send out applications to all registered voters?
Well, if he appoints the members of the State Board of Election, perhaps he can tell them what to do. I'm guessing here. I know he has that.
Well, the Secretary of State in Ohio was going to send every registered voter a ballot, and then he couldn't get the funding from the state legislature to do that. So instead, they're sending them all applications.
But if he had the funding in Ohio and chose and wanted to send a ballot to all registered voters, maybe he got a Zuckerberg grant, says, I got the money, I can send everybody in the state a ballot, the state legislature would still step in to prevent him, right?
And that's what they did in Ohio. They made it real clear and passed laws that prohibited that. So the question that's up in the air, could you use the grant for postage?
There are a lot of questions like that, Bob. And I'm trying to get to somebody who can actually maybe answer some of them. I've heard how that could actually backfire too. If you think about it, suppose one big county pays for postage and another gets grant money to pay for postage and another one doesn't. Does that give the Republicans a way to create like a Palm Beach County, leading to a Bush v. Gore scenario of unequal treatment?
Yeah. I've thought about that repeatedly. It does seem like, unequal treatment.
God. Okay, listeners. This is Harvey Sugo Wasserman. We're on the Green Power Wellness Show here at PRN. Thank you, Jesse, for engineering from New York. We have two of the great experts and we are deep, deep, deep in the weeds here on how this election is going to be physically administered. And thank goodness people are paying attention 8 weeks, 9 weeks beforehand. But we have Steve Rosenfeld, whose stuff is published all over the internet. And you're principally at what, Steve? Where's your where's your primary source of publication?
Well, this one website created by Joe Connison, a great investigative reporter, New York's old Village Voice, has a website called National Memo. But my stuff is on, it's on a lot of sites. In L.A., it's the West Coast L.A. Progressive. It's on Salon. Sometimes Yahoo picks it up. But I created a website. It actually went live this past weekend called votingbooth.media, where stuff is. And so that's – and, you know, it's the same pieces that just appear wherever they get picked up.
Okay. And Bob Fitrakis, our great pioneer of voting rights in Columbus, Ohio, with which hopefully will soon be renamed since they removed the statue of Christopher Columbus from City Hall, one of the great events in all of American history. And Steve, Bob is the publisher of freepress.org and co-author with me and Steve of a book on election theft in Ohio. And Bob and I have written many things and published them together. And I have a piece up, by the way, asking Michael Moore. Michael Moore is frequently quoted in the mainstream media, corporate media, as saying, warning people that Trump could win. We have challenged him to, okay, Michael, we know that what we need now is for you especially to help us get people trained, get people into the election boards. Join our grassrootsep.org website. That piece is published where a lot of my stuff is published at reader-supported news and at freepress.org. So you might want to take a look at that one. And we urge everybody listening in to this really deep and complicated conversation to go to grassrootsep.org and also join our Monday Zoom calls, 5 p.m. Eastern time. Next one will be September 14th. We go 90 solid minutes of eye-rolling detail on what's going on with the election. And boy, it is jam-packed. There's never been an election even remotely like this. I mean, the detail of discussion of how the elections are going to be conducted. I mean, people have finally, Bob and Steve and I mean, we've been banging our heads against this wall for more than 16 years since, exactly 16 years since the 2004 fiasco in Ohio. And this election is so complicated and so convoluted that it could literally be decided by a single county official in a single state deciding whether or not to accept ballots that have postmarks. I mean, that happened in Wisconsin. The law was unclear. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys. In the primary in Wisconsin this past year, there was major litigation on what to do about ballots coming in late or on time or whatever. And it went to the U.S. Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, and it was never actually clarified. In my understanding, it was never actually clarified whether ballots that came in without postmarks could be counted. And my understanding is that it became the discretion of county supervisors as to whether or not to accept ballots that were postmarked or not postmarked, rather. And there was differences from county to county. And in a state like Wisconsin, a decision like that could be decide the whole presidency. Is that right? And is that even remotely accurate?
I think it's close. What do you, Bob? I mean, I know the first part of that decision. I don't know what they actually.
Right. We know the part on the 10 days.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the thing about this is that the thing about this, about Wisconsin and Michigan, that makes it really different than most other states is, with the exception of northern New England, their map, their literal map of political jurisdictions, political boundaries, it's an 18th century legacy. So for example, in California, you know, we have, close to 60 different counties, and most elections are run by the county. The county and city are often synonymous: San Francisco, Sacramento, San Jose, you know, San Diego. In Michigan and Wisconsin, there's something like 1800, and one is a little bit, one, Wisconsin is 1850, and Michigan is either a little more or a little bit less, 1850 different jurisdictions, each with their own election clerk, counting votes, issuing ballots, with their different processes of whether it's technology or in-person review boards, you know, deciding, you know, when and where there'll be office hours open to vote early, to drop stuff off. So the thing about that is, when we're talking about, you know, Bush v. Gore, the Republicans went in and said, hey, you're, you know, this is supposed to be equal and fair, and you're not treating things the same in this county versus that county. There are so many things that are going to be unequal in the way that votes are cast and counted across Michigan and Wisconsin. I mean, the 35 biggest cities in Wisconsin don't allow you to drop off an absentee ballot on election day because they want you to take it to a vote counting center. The 1,800 plus smaller ones don't have a problem with that. There are so many things that are like that, that are on, they're like low hanging fruit that's like for partisan litigation. And the only remedy is to have such high turnout that none of these things will stick. And so that it doesn't come down to one state where there's three electoral votes in play, like New Hampshire or something like that.
Having lived in Detroit area till I was 33, when I turned 18, right next to Detroit was Redford Township, a blue-collar township. So I had to go down to the Township Hall, which is a rundown old building, and go into the basement and be registered by Ruth Sullivan, Township Clerk. And I remember when I was down there, the drop ceiling fell in.
There you go. Well, Bob Fitrakis and Steve Rosenfeld, I mean, this is eye-rolling stuff, but it is absolutely how the election is going to be decided. I mean, you know, it could come down to a single county in Michigan or Wisconsin. The rules aren't clear.
Well, you know, yeah, municipalities are not even counties. That's the problem. And, you know, they all got their own rituals. In Redford Township, the people who registered to vote were the Teamsters. And I mean, the old Teamsters. They made sure you registered, okay?
Yeah, right. So if you didn't register, Vinny gave you a pair of cement shoes and you went into the river, right?
No, they weren't that bad, but you might have to spend the night in a dumpster. A little attitude adjustment.
You know, I mean, this is covering this election beforehand is a mind boggler. Folks, if you're listening and you want to join us Monday night, 5 p.m. Eastern time, go to grassrootsep.org. Bob and Steve will be back with us, hopefully. And we just spend 90 minutes every week, and it's down to 8 weeks now, sorting through the details here. And it is really hair-raising when you consider the stakes. And, of course, confusion is exactly what a fascist loves in an election like this. I mean, we are just going to be all over the map. Everybody's already yelling at everybody. It's not clear. Steve mentioned at the top of the hour, very interesting, that polls are now showing, whereas it looked like we were going to have 80, 90% absentee, we now be maybe up to 50% early voting. Now, that's a huge improvement over what we had before. Is that right, Steve?
Yeah, well, what it was this. There's been a shift in late July and early August. The most reputable national polls found that somewhere two-thirds of the Democrats polled said they were going to vote by mail. They were going to somehow get a mailed-out ballot and find a way to return it. That number has now fallen in half in battleground states. And those people are saying they're going to find a way to return that absentee ballot in person or vote early in person. And that's really interesting because the pollster, these are national polling organizations that basically AP and Fox News did a poll together in three battleground states and reported that. And there were other polls that confirmed the same stuff. They're actually now asking people for the first time that I can ever remember, how are you going to vote? Where are you going to vote? When are you going to vote?
Wow. And here's a question for everybody. Bob, Ohio is so corrupt. Is there any chance that we will get a fair election in Ohio?
Well, it depends on how people vote. You know, I mean, each one of these things you can sort of game. One of the things that I've been working on is my law firm just sent out a request to all 88 counties. Simple request. We just want four questions. Who programmed your machines? The, you know, was it a company? Was it an individual? Is it a local programmer, or is it someone on staff? And we're trying to figure out who programmed what, because, you know, ESNS has capabilities to program via cellular, if you can allow that, you know, kind of drive-by or remote programming. So we want to know who pulled, you know, who particularly, the actual person who programmed the voter rolls, the electronic voting polls, and of course the machines.
Unbelievable. Let's post your letter at Grassroots EP. Steve Rosenfeld and Bob Petrakis, it's been fabulous having you on. I mean, this is mind-boggling stuff. We could probably talk another 6 hours about the details in the various states. Bob, for example, when people come in early vote in Ohio, are they going to get paper ballots, or are they going to be voting on the old touchscreens?
I mean, it depends. It depends on what county they're in. The last time I checked, there was only one county that was using the really old machines, and that was Ashtabula, a county that went for Obama but switched dramatically for Trump. And in some counties, you have a choice. You can vote on electronic machine, touchscreen, that marks the ballot for you, or you can request in Franklin County a ballot you mark and feed into a ESNS digital image scanner.
All right, well, that's what we want. We're out of time, but everybody do exactly what Bob just said. Get a paper ballot, mark it by hand, and feed it into the machine. Unbelievable, you guys. I mean, this is just, you couldn't make this up. Really, you couldn't make this up. Thank you, Jesse in New York. Progressive Radio Network will be putting this out. Bob Petrakis in Columbus, Ohio, publisher of the Free Press. Steve Rosenfeld, his stuff is all over the internet. We will see you next week at the Green Power and Wellness Show. We'll see you Monday night at the Zoom call through grassrootsep.org. Write me straight if you want to, solartopia@gmail.com, and we will see you next week in the Green Power and Wellness Hour. Thank you, guys.
Pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world.
Will we multiply? We needed more. The rich got richer.